Good morning. Just about to start today's class. We'll be taking up Parshas Toldos. And I'll start just in about 1 minute. And once you hit audio feed, just please type audio okay. Just confirm that the audio is functioning properly. And again, we'll get started in just a minute. Good morning.
Good morning, Rabbi. How are you?
Good. Hey, Doug. How are you?
And Jim and Ripka are on the phone.
Okay. Hello, everybody. Okay. And we got Naomi is on from India, and Avner from Brazil, Laura is in Washington. They're online. Okay, so today what I wanted to do is take up something on the parsha we read yesterday. And I think it's a great example. And again, this is what we're focusing on a lot. And it's very important that we really appreciate, you know, the wisdom of the Torah is seen not when somebody suggests a possibility, when a possibility is merely suggested, but when an explanation is demanded by the verse. So when we see an explanation that perfectly fits the verse and it really is explains the verse, and not only the verse but the whole series of verses, when it explains it all perfectly, then we know we've hit on a true idea. And we also appreciate, you know, God's wisdom, how he gave just enough information in the verses to prod our questions but also to answer them. I mean, the very verses, it's amazing that science is just an amazing thing, that the very verses, or the very nuances, or the subtleties in the verse that create the questions, actually are the answers, too. So this, I feel, is what really gives a person the greatest appreciation for God's wisdom, because, you know, the primary objective in our lives is love of God. Now, we can't love God, we don't know what God is. What we can do is be enamored by his wisdom and be taken back by that over all else that we preoccupy ourselves with. So when we study, for example, what Maimonides says, when we study the universe and we study the Torah, that's how we come to a real appreciation and love of the Creator. So let's take the verses. We're going to be reading right in the beginning of Toldos, which is Genesis 25, verse 19. So again, Genesis 25, verse 19, we'll start from there, I'll read it. And then we'll raise the questions, and then we'll suggest the answers. Okay. So, what happened? It says as follows. These are the generations of Isaac, the son of Abraham. Abraham bore Isaac. And it was that when Isaac was 40 years old, he took Rebekah, the daughter of Bethuel. Some say that the next word, Harami, means the Aramite or Aramean person, meaning a nationality. But you'll see that there's another verse. There's another explanation on that word. But nonetheless, it says that when, and it was when Isaac was 40 years old, that he took Rebekah, the daughter of Bethuel, the Aramean, from the place Paddan Aram, the brother of Laban, the Aramean. So he took her as a wife. And then it tells us the relationship of who her father and brother were. And Yitzhak had prayed to God regarding his wife, for she was barren. And God entreated him. God had answered him, and Rebecca became his wife, became pregnant. And now we're up to verse 22. And the children were very tumultuous in her inside of her, meaning they were very, it was a very aggravated pregnancy. And Rebecca said, "If this is so, Lamazanochi, why did I want this?" Meaning the pregnancy. If this is really what pregnancy is like, it's so there's so much commotion going on inside of me. So then it says that she went to inquire of God. And Rashi says, why, what does it mean, Lamazanochi, why am I? Meaning, if the pain is so much, so why did I desire so much and pray to become pregnant? All right. But she went, she inquired of God. And God said to her, and this was through the prophets, and it says that she went either to study hall of Shem and Heber. Shem was the son of Noah, and they established a place of study of God's providence. Either she went to them or to Abraham. Interesting, she did not go to Isaac. But it says that the information that she received from either Shem and Heber or from Abraham was the following. You have two nations that are in your stomach, and two nations, two people, from your innards will they separate out when you give birth and when they become great. And they will set up kings and great kings, and the older will serve the younger. And that was the whole information that she got. That was the whole prophecy that she received. So it was that when her days were full to give birth, behold, there were twins inside of her. And the first one came out very reddish and like completely covered with hair, like a mantle. And she called, and they called his name Asaph. Asaph means like the grass of the field, very, you know, covered with lush. So he was covered with hair. And afterwards, his brother came out, and his hand was clutching the heel of Asaph, and he called his name Yaakov, Jacob, which is the word, play on the word of heel. And Isaac was 60 years old when she bore them. And the lads grew. And it was that Asaph was a man who knew how to hunt, a man of the field. And Jacob, he was a simple man, and he dwelled in tents, meaning he was involved in study. And Isaac loved Asaph because he captured him with his mouth. Commentaries say because he used to ask his father how to give tithes from his food. So ostensibly he was presenting himself as being obedient to proper ideals, proper morality. So he says that's why Isaac loved Esau. And Rivka loved Jacob. And Jacob Jacob was one day preparing food, and Esau came from the field, and he was tired. He was exhausted. And again, the rabbi's comment, why was he exhausted? Because that was the day that Abraham died, and that's why Jacob was involved in preparing lentils. It's like a food that you feed for the mourners. And Esau, when he saw that Abraham died, he was so attached to the physical life. Now that he saw that the man that he respected so much, his grandfather, died, he went out and committed idolatry and adultery and murder all in that day. And he was exhausted. And Esau said, when he came back from the field, he said to Jacob, give me some of this red porridge that you have prepared, because I'm exhausted. Therefore, they called his name Edom. They called Esau's name Edom, which means red, because of the red food that he was telling Jacob to feed him. So Jacob responded, sell me today your right of the firstborn. And Esau said back to him, behold, I'm about to die. I mean, I'm exhausted. Then what do I need this bechorah? What do I need this birthright for? So Jacob said, swear it to me today. So Esau swore it to him, and he sold his birthright to Jacob. And Jacob then gave to Esau bread and the food that he prepared. And Esau ate, and he drank, and he got up, and he left, and Esau despised the firstborn. Okay. we go on. We're going to skip the next part, which goes into the famine. And we're going to pick up with okay, we now go to the beginning of chapter 27. Okay, 27:1 is where we'll continue now. And it reads as follows. And it was that when Isaac was old, that his eyes became dim from seeing, and he was blind. And he called to Esau, his son, the elder. And he said to him, my son. And he said, behold, I am here. And Isaac said to his son, Esau, behold, I am old. I do not know the day that I will die. And now take up your bow and arrow and go to the field and catch me an animal. And make me delicious food that I love, and bring it to me, and I'll eat, in order that I should bless you, in order that my soul should bless you before I die. And Rebekah heard this when Isaac was speaking to Esau, his son. So Esau went out to the field to capture an animal in order to bring back for his father. And Rebekah said to Jacob, her son, saying, behold, I just heard your father speaking to Esau, your brother. And he said that he should capture an animal and make delicious food that I should eat and bless you before God, before I die. And Rebekah continues telling Jacob the following, and she says, now, my son, listen to my voice, to what I command you. Go to the sheep and get for me two goats, very, very nice ones. And I will prepare delicious food for your father like he loves. And you will bring it to your father, and he will eat, in order that he blesses you before he dies. And Jacob said back to Rivka, his mother, behold, Esau, my brother, is a man that's completely covered with hair, and I'm smooth-skinned. Perhaps my father will feel my skin, and he'll know that I lied, and I'll be as a liar, and it'll bring a curse upon me, and not a blessing. So Rebekah said to her son, the curse will be on me. And according to Targum Unculus, it means that I know through prophecy that you will not be cursed, is what she was saying to him. So she said, I know you will not be cursed. Just listen to my words and go and get them for me. So he went and he brought them to his mother, and she made the delicious food that Jacob's father loves. And Rivka took the clothing of Esav, her son, that are the precious ones, the precious garments, that were with her in the house. And she dressed up Jacob in those clothes. And then the skins of the goats, which of course is not served in the food, so the skins of the goats, she dressed up his hands and the smooth part of his neck. So she wanted to make Jacob appear with the exterior of Esav in case he would be touched by his father. So she gave to Jacob bread that she made and then the food. And Jacob brought it to his father, and he said, my father. So his father said back, Isaac said back, here I am. Who are you, my son? So Jacob said to his father, I am Esav, your firstborn. I have done as you have told me. Arise now and satisfy and sit and eat from the food that I've captured, in order that you should bless my soul. And Isaac said to his son, how have you done this so quick, that you have found food so quick? So Jacob said back, because God, your God, has hastened my way. He has made it easy, allowed me to capture the animal quicker. So Isaac said back to Jacob, not knowing it was him, he said, come close, and I will feel you, my son. Are you Esav, my son, or not? So Jacob drew close to Isaac, his father, and his father felt the skin. And his father said, the voice sounds like Jacob, but the hands feel like Esav. And therefore, Isaac did not recognize it because his hands were hairy like Esav, his brother, and he blessed him. So therefore, Isaac blessed him. And interestingly, Isaac says one more time, are you my son Esav? And he said, I am. And he said, come close, and I'll eat from the food, my son, in order that I bless, my soul blesses you. So he drew close again. Interesting, he drew close again, perhaps indicates that he walked back a little bit after the first time. He kept his distance. He didn't want to allow perhaps too much exposure to his person being in front of Isaac. So he drew close, and he ate, and he gave him wine to drink. And he said again, "Yomri lo Yitzchok." And Isaac said again, his father, draw close the third time, and I'll kiss you, my son. So he drew close again the third time, and he kissed him, and then Jacob, and then Isaac smelled the clothing of the clothes that the Rebekah had placed on him. And he blessed him. He said, behold, I see your scent is like the scent of the field that God has blessed. So now he also smelled the clothing, which was Esav's clothing. And he gives him the blessing. Okay. So there's a lot of information, but hopefully the story is familiar to us. We've read it before. So let's see if we could understand. Let's take a look at the verses again from the beginning. So what happened was that Rebecca had a tumultuous pregnancy. It was painful, and she inquired, according to the rabbis, with the other women, if this was the norm, and they said it wasn't. So therefore, she went and inquired from prophets, either Shem and Abram or Abraham, what was going on. Evidently, she sensed there was something here different going on. And she was told that she's going to have two nations and that the older will serve the younger. And that was it. And then also significance. We see that when she gave birth, so the Torah tells us, for some reason, that the first one was very hairy. It was covered with hair. And then that was Esav. And when Jacob came out afterwards, his hand was clutching the heel of Esav. It tells us that too. And then it skips to the story about maybe a decade or two decades later. Immediately it skips. And tells us about how Esav was tired and he wanted the food, and Jacob said, I'll give it to you. Just sell me your birthright. So we have to ask, well, what's going on over there? It also tells us that Isaac had loved Esav and Rebekah loved Jacob. Why does it tell us that information? And it's also interesting that Rebekah is an earshot of Isaac when he tells Esav later on in the beginning of chapter 27 that he's about to bless him. So this is purposely communicated to let us know that it was orchestrated, that she should hear this moment. She should be aware of this moment. And she tells Jacob that he has to lie and obtain the birthright. And we see later on that after Isaac finds out that it really was Esav, because after Isaac gets the birthright and he leaves, it says no sooner did he leave that Jacob left, that Esav walked in and says, get up, my father, and eat from the food that I caught. And Isaac was confused. He just gave a blessing to somebody he thought was Esav. And he says, who are you? I'm Esav. He says back to him, I'm Esav, your firstborn. And he trembled. And what was this trembling about? And he even tells Esav that the blessing is going to stay intact, even though he was deceived. Evidently, he knew that if the blessing is successfully transmitted, that it was through God's will. And of course, what need is there? If it's God's will that somebody gets a blessing, well, God does not need a man in order to verbalize something. So that's also a primary question. What is the need for the whole verbalization of Isaac? And, Rebecca saw this as being essential, too. That's why she made sure that Jacob went in and got it. But Isaac never retracts the blessing. He says, no, he is blessed. And the trembling, we have to explain, too. What was he trembling about? All right, so we have a number of questions. But now let me pause here and hear any of your observations or your questions.
Rabbi?
Yes.
Yeah, Rabbi, may I ask a question? In reference to Rebecca telling Yaakov to lie and take the blessing, wasn't it because she had some kind of nevuah, some kind of prophecy that if Esav had gotten the blessing, it would be terrible for the Jewish people, and that it would be safer for the Jewish people that Yaakov got the blessing because she saw what was coming? She was given that prophecy. I was reading that someplace. I'm not sure if that's accurate or not.
Well, I mean, the communication she received through prophecy was that the elder will serve the younger. It was a very brief.
Was it because she did that explain? Was it also explained that the younger was the one who would be able to bring the Jewish nation to more holiness than the elder?
Mm-hmm. It would seem to me, because he was the one that was, of course, perfected. And but there was something essential in terms of her receiving this blessing, because this seems to be the whole purpose of the prophecy. Without the prophecy, so the blessing would have gone to Esav. And evidently it was crucial for some reason, which we have to answer, that it should not. Even though God's the one that really fulfills the blessing. So we'll have to try to put the pieces of the
puzzle. Because basically she lied and she told Yaakov to lie.
That's right.
Jacob to lie.
Yeah.
But the lie was for the good. It was for the benefit of the Jewish nation.
Well, of course, yeah. Lying is I mean, even God told Samuel the prophet once to lie. When King Saul, the first king, had sinned that he didn't listen to God to kill to kill Agag, who was the king of the Amalekites. So he did not listen, therefore he was removed from being king, and God told Samuel the prophet to go and anoint somebody else, who eventually would be David. But Samuel said to God, if Saul hears of this, then I'm going to anoint a new king and remove him. he'll be angered and he'll kill me. So God said to Samuel, so then take an animal with you as a cover-up, and if he sees you traveling, you'll just tell him you're bringing a sacrifice. So he won't think you're traveling to go anoint. So you see, God himself uses that. And God also even told Abraham that when Sarah said that she was, her husband was too old to have children, so God communicated to Abraham that she said that she was too old. So God covered that up too. So you see that a lie is not an absolute wrong. But that's not the real issue. The issue here is trying to understand what's going on in terms of what's this whole thing about this troublesome pregnancy and twins and the fact that Asa was hairy and Jacob was grabbing on the heel. I mean, all these details, it's just full of details that you have to try to understand what is it about. Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure. All right, so let me see if anybody has questions or comments. Let's you know, everybody participate.
Rabbi, why did Isaac favor Esau, and why did Rebecca favor Jacob?
Right. The verse tells us that for some reason. And the verse tells us that Isaac had favored Esau because he caught him with his mouth. He presented himself in a certain way that appeared to be righteous. I think Rashi is the one that says he was asking his father, how do I tithe salt? Meaning he was really trying to gain his father's favor by presenting himself as being a righteous individual.
When deep down he wasn't.
Right. And Rebecca had the communication that the elder would serve the younger. So she had absolute knowledge, meaning prophecy. So that's why it says that she favored and she loved Jacob. We're not talking about this emotional, you know, parental love. These are high-level beings. Like Rabbi Chait explained many times that it's important that we do not look at them as we look at ourselves or our contemporaries today. Because people today just are not on that level where they raise themselves to such a level of perfection without a Torah and earn God's prophetic communications. So we have to not project onto them and assume that they had this type of love for the child. It doesn't mean they're immune to that. No, they had emotions like we do. But what the Torah points out are lessons for us, because these are phenomenal figures. And we have to see when it tells us that a statement that Isaac loved Esau and Rebecca loved Jacob, there's much more than meets the eye with a statement like that. But you see some information. The Torah tells you why, because Esav was presenting himself as righteous before with his mouth. Because the verse itself hints it that he caught his father with his mouth. Things he did with his mouth caught his father's love. Basically, say he lied in terms of what his character was. He knew what his father valued. He saw that his father was involved in studying God and providence in the world. And this is not what he was doing. He was out. Adultery, and he was aggressive, and he could have used his tendencies for the good, but he didn't. So, but he was able to, create a smoke screen in front of his father. Whereas Rebecca was very clear about personalities. And what you can prove that to me in the verse, that Rebecca was very clear about human personality. She was very sharp. How do you know that? Because the Torah doesn't leave us hanging and just tell us that Rebecca loved Jacob without explaining to us why she did. So it's true that she had the prophecy. But that tells what the future is going to be, that the older is going to serve the younger. So she knew that something had to take place. What's also very amazing, and a primary lesson here, is that prophecy is not just simply where God controls the situation and people sit back and it just affects and that's it, and God is just running everything exclusively. Prophecy gives information to a human being, but then they have to use the intelligence to work with it. And the proof of this is a beautiful explanation that Rabbi Chait gave, which was, I believe, at the end of, I think it's next week's Parsha. Yeah, at the end of next week's Parsha, it says that after he left Laban, and he finally was successful, and he was able to manipulate the situation, and he had the dreams where the angel showed him the speckled and spotted sheep. So it says a very interesting thing that that when Jacob finally went on his way, and after he had all his children, his 11 children at that point, there met him the angels of God. And Jacob said, when he saw the encampment of God, he said, he called the name of the place, Two Camps. That's how next week's Parsha ends, the Yetzer ends. So Rabbi Chay explained a beautiful idea that after Jacob saw all this, and he saw that God came to Laban in a dream of the night and said, don't speak to Jacob, good or bad. So when Jacob heard this, so why he said he now knew that God spoke and warned Laban, because Laban was, he was crazed, and he was about to kill everybody. When Jacob, you know, escaped, and he slipped away without telling him, without telling Laban he was leaving. So this really aggravated and crazed Laban to the point that he chased after him and overtook him. He was about to kill him. So God came to a dream at night and said, don't speak to Jacob, good or bad. So when Jacob heard this, Rabbi Chaim explained, so now how did he know that that was really a prophecy and not just a dream? I mean, people have dreams where they think God is speaking to them. But how did Jacob know for sure that God really came to Laban? It's because Laban said, I had in my dream last night that your God told me not to speak good or bad to you. Now, if it was really a dream where the guilt of Laban was overtaking him and God was warning him about something, all the warning would have been was don't speak bad or don't do bad to Jacob and his family. But that's not what happened. The dream that he had, the vision that he had, which was a true vision, also said don't speak good. And when Jacob heard Laban repeating over the dream, and he said that your God told me not to speak good or bad to you, so Jacob said to himself, this must have been a real prophecy, because God would not, a dream of a person who's guilt-ridden, if he's about to kill his family, the dream of a guilt-ridden person, that's a true dream that he creates himself from his own guilt, is only going to have a warning not to do evil. But if he was also told in the dream not to do good, that's an indication to Jacob that it was really God. And now what happened was that after this whole event ended, and Jacob called the place the Two Camps. Why? Because he realized that it was through his working together with the prophecies that he received that created the success for him. So it wasn't just he was sitting back and God was guiding the ship solo. He worked, and he had the dreams, and he stripped the rods and made them speckled and spotted, and he was active in terms of making a success for himself, using information that he received through prophecy too. But he was not idle. So that's what he means, two camps, that he saw now that the way God's providence works is that he involves himself with man, he gives him a certain amount of information, but then man has to take that information and work with it. So now let's apply that to our case, and where do we see that? We see that Rebecca here worked with it. She didn't just get this prophecy, but she also had knowledge that she had she was cunning, more cunning than Isaac. Again, Asa was able to pull a smokescreen in front of Isaac, but not in front of Rebecca. Rebecca had also more accurate knowledge of human personalities. But where do you see the Torah tells us that? So here's a, yes.
Isn't it because she was raised in the house of Laban, and so she was already familiar with deceit and idolatry?
Right. Excellent. Very good. And to your point,
that's wonderful. Yes.
Yeah, I'll back it up, because it says in 25:20, if you read the verse, so this is a big problem. The verse. What's the problem when it talks about her father Bethuel being Aramean and her brother Laban also being Aramean? What's the problem with that statement?
Well, you could ask why. I mean, if you say that Rebecca is the daughter of Bethuel, okay, fine. So why is it Ann, sister of Laban? I mean, that is really obvious, and usually don't identify
You're right, but it doesn't stop there. It doesn't say that she was the daughter of Betuel and the sister of Laban. It says she was the daughter of Betuel, the Aramean, and the sister of Laban, the Aramean. Now tell me the question.
Why say the Aramean twice?
Right. Why? Right, what's the question? What is the question based on?
Well, there are no unused words in the Torah, and if Bethuel's an Aramean, of course her brother would be an Aramean.
Exactly. So therefore, you're forced to say that Aramean here doesn't mean Aramean. And this is what the commentator, the Or HaChaim, says. He says the verse doubles the word Arami from Padnaram in order to awaken you, Kineskavnu Ba'oma Harami, because what it intends to tell you when it tells you the word Arami, this is to say that they are tricksters, because the word Arami, if you change one letter, means a trickster. So now we understand why it says that she was the daughter of Betuel, who was a shrewd trickster, a con artist, and also she was a sister of Laban, who was a con artist. Meaning to say that she was surrounded in her youth with people that were con artists. So she was very adept at determining human personality. Now we understand why this verse is there. And it's not repeating the fact that it's a nationality. It's repeating the fact that she was surrounded by a father and a brother who were both of the same ilk. They were the same cloth. So now, why is the verse telling us this? Because now it gives us information as to why she... there's another question to this answer. You have this prophecy about what's going to happen in the future. So why does the prophecy go through Rebecca? I mean, Isaac was a prophet. But now you know why. Because she had a clear picture of human behavior. And she would now have to, she understood what had to be done in terms of that the Jewish nation, like Rivka was saying before, that the Jewish nation now has to be established and guided through Jacob. And that there should be no reliance on, because the way it was going to work was that Esav was going to get the blessings. He was never going to get the blessings of Abraham. And that we see later on. That even when Isaac thought that it was Esav in front of him, he never gave him the blessings of Abraham. He gave him blessings of the monetary, of the physical world, as Rabbi Sheikh explained. His idea was that, I believe this is what Rabbi Sheikh said, his idea was that there would be the two brothers together would establish the Jewish people. Isaac would be the intellectual partner, and Esav would help procure. But the way Rebecca saw the plan is that really Jacob should be the sole leader, and he should also obtain the physical. So this way the Jewish nation should be completely rooted in the intellectual leader, who is also would be the one who would procure whatever the needs are, you know, in the physical world.
Rabbi, could I say something, please?
Yes.
Yeah. What is really beautiful, that I feel is beautiful, my own humble opinion, is that I think that Rebecca was truly blessed, because here she lived in a home where she could have learned, as being the young sister, she could have learned to be evil. She could have picked up the ways that it were all around her, yet she chose to do tshuva in a sense, and to go with the Yitzchak, and to raise the boys the best she could in the way of Hashem. And even to the point where she told Yaakov to lie in order to prevent losing the blessedness to the Jewish nation that she may have had it as a prophecy that she wanted to protect. So she was really, in a sense, even though they were all Jews at the time, she was really maybe, maybe the first Bar Tshuva.
Well, she was never...
Could you...
She wasn't. She didn't repent. She was never evil to begin with.
Okay, okay. Because she was a good neshama. She was a good person. But she could have been. She was in the surroundings, the environment of where she could have learned to be evil. And
right.
Yet she didn't.
Right. She used her free will to be righteous.
So in a sense, she was blessed.
Yeah, she used her free will to be righteous. Well, she used her free she used her free will to be righteous. She wasn't. We can't say she was blessed because that means God's stepping in to change. No, she had free will like anybody else, and she used it properly. And
okay.
She always stayed on the
Okay, right. Okay.
Now this also we understand now. We also understand now that you brought that up that why. The pregnancy was difficult because this was God's means of utilizing Rebecca to learn about the prophecies. So it was something which affected her and not Isaac because she was really the one that had this accurate knowledge. So the prophecy worked through her. Right? So you understand?
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. All right. This is also explains why she didn't go to Isaac. We asked before, who does she go to? And it says she went to inquire of God. The rabbis say it was either Abraham or Shem Be'er, but not Isaac. Well, why not? Isaac was a prophet. We understand now, because since Isaac was being captured by the cunning of Esav and how he lied and presented himself a certain way, so therefore it would not have worked. And therefore, Rebecca and Jacob also could not have confronted Isaac about this because he would not have accepted that Esau was really that way. It was only once the blessings were successfully transmitted, and then Esau, the real Esau, came before Jacob, came before Isaac, and Isaac, who are you? I just gave the blessings. And he says, I'm Esau. So now, why did Isaac tremble? So Isaac trembled because he finally realized that Esau was not fitting. And this was greatly disturbing to him. He was fooled. And this is why they did not approach him directly, because it could only be once he saw that the blessings were successfully transmitted that it would be convincing to Isaac what the true nature of Esav was. But if Rebekah or Jacob would have told Isaac, you know, listen, Esav is really not fit, it would not have worked. It wouldn't have washed. So they had to do. Yeah, they had to use this way, and you see that she was told in the prophecy that was the primary element of the prophecy that the older will serve the younger. That was the license that she had in order to do this. You have to have a permission to do this, but not only that, there had to be an acquisition of the birthright because it's a monetary thing. Now we come to a very interesting part of the story. Esav is coming back from the field. And he's completely exhausted. And he says to Jacob, give me some of this food. And immediately, Jacob has these words on the tip of his tongue. Sell me your birthright. Why? How come these were so ready on the tip of his tongue? What must you say?
Because he had gotten permission from his mother already.
Right.
The event had occurred. He had gotten... I guess because he had gotten the blessing from Yitzchak, and he wanted to prevent any fighting between them. He wanted maybe Esav to give it to him willingly.
Well, no, there was no blessing yet. That's not true. There was no blessing given at this point. This was still prior to.
Well, there wasn't.
There was no blessing yet. Oh. The question is even before the blessing. This is when he was first acquiring birthright in order that he honestly could take the birthright. So why was Jacob so ready with his response? And let me say, Laura, yes.
Did he have some kind of prophecy?
No, he didn't. Doesn't say that he did. And Laura is asking if a trickster means the same thing as cunning. Yeah. Yes, Laura. Trickster means the same thing as cunning. Yeah, I'm sorry, Rifka. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm confused now with the timing. I was under the impression for a moment that the reason that Yaakov asked Esau for his birthright was because Yitzchak had already given it to him.
No.
And he wanted just to clear it that once Esau found out...
No, that's wrong.
Go and attack him.
That's not the right.
I'm wrong. Looking at that.
All right, think about that for a second. How come Jacob was so ready? And let me just, Abner is asking something on screen. She only learned how to be smart. Let me just see what you're saying here. You're writing, see from the beginning where she helped Eliezer with all those camels, so she realized, good money came out from her work. Then she used the same intelligence when her husband's blind. Okay, definitely she was righteous out there, but she learned how to be smart with him because she was around, she was surrounded by a father and brother that were very cunning. Okay. All right.
Rabbi? Go ahead. Yeah, I just discussed it with Daryl, and Daryl said that he had already heard from his mother, from Rebecca, that she wanted him to get the birthright.
Okay, that's what you must say. You're right. That is the deduction. I mean, the fact that Jacob, that's the answer, the fact that Jacob was ready with this response as soon as this one day, Esav comes back to the field tired, exhausted, and he says, you know, give me this food. And Jacob immediately responds, sell me your birthright. It must be that this was rehearsed already. Why was it rehearsed? Because Rebecca told him at a certain age when he was ready about the prophecy, about the plan, and that his vital role, but that he must acquire the birthright, you know, justly. It has to be a real purchase. He can't just take it from his brother. So that's why he was ready when Esav came in, because you have to deduce that there was prior conversations that Rebecca had. All right.
Okay.
So that's an important point to say, is that, because normally when we just read the story, it sounds like, you know, Jacob was just, you know, all right, you know, I'll give you the food, but, you know, sell me your birthright. I mean, where did this come from? You have to ask that question. Why was it so quick on the tip of his tongue? But now we understand Rebecca had this prophecy before she even gave birth to the two boys. And she carried this with her, and at the right time, she told Jacob about it confidentially. And then when it was time to actually get it, she worked it out with the skins. And you see a very interesting point, is that why does the Torah tell us that, you know, Esav was hairy, and that Jacob is clutching onto the heel? But we'll come back to those questions in a second. I think, Francesca, you had a question?
I just feel like as we dig into the story, it sort of fills in details that I didn't really understand, because I did kind of wonder, you know, why are they being so deceptive? But it makes complete sense when we talk about where Rebecca was raised, and then just because, you know, the Marine Mishle, how you have to act practically with the people that you encounter and deal with. So Rabbi Moskowitz was given the example of how, like, somebody who's, you know, making a business deal with rich people might hire a limo and, you know, rent out a fancy building to do the deal in and have all this appearance, because that's the people that he was dealing with. So it kind of sounds like for Rebecca to do what seems deceiving was just a practical way of achieving the blessing for, the birthright and the blessing for Jacob through, you know, because Asa was such a, I guess, tricky person, I don't know. It just seemed different. It just put a different slant for me for the story.
Well, it fills in, like you're saying, it fills in the gaps, because there are a lot of questions that, you know, why did she do the lie, and this whole thing with even Jacob, when Rebecca tells Jacob to go and take the birthright, he doesn't say it's wrong. He just says, he'll feel me, and then I'll look like a liar to my father, and then he'll curse me. But not that the lie is wrong, it's just that he'll look at it as wrong, but he doesn't understand the prophecy. If it was really a lie, he should have told his mother. You know, he should have said, Mom, you know, I can't do this. This is a lie. But that is not what Jacob said. That also you have to realize. And you never see them punished, meaning this is the right thing to do. Naomi, I think I heard you try to get a question there.
It seems to me like that even if he didn't sell the birthright, that Jacob would have blessing to Judah. So that's what. So why exactly was it necessary? Is that just for Esau's satisfaction? And the other thing, it seems to me like, did Yaakov? My guess is he didn't know that he sold the birthright.
You mean Isaac didn't know?
But Esau didn't know that he sold.
Yeah. Well, the thing is that they had to acquire it. There had to be a real purchase. So that you can't just take what belongs to Esav. In terms of what Jacob was going to receive as being the righteous son, that we said before that Isaac never intended to give the blessings of Abraham to Esav. That was never going to go to Esav. That much he understood about Jacob. But it was the blessings of the physical that was now important that he also obtained in terms of the Jewish people being completely independent. All right, so the plan that Isaac had, not knowing the real nature of Esav, was going to be flawed. And Rebekah was told this, and she worked it out in order to obtain it. Okay?
Why would Esav also sell it if he knew that, did he know it had to do with the monetary? Like, why would he sell it for more lentils?
I don't know.
You hear commentary even saying that he didn't want to do the work in the Mikdash, like that, but...
It could very well be. I mean, in his very words, he says, I'm going to die. What do I need it? There's something there. I don't really know offhand how to answer that question. It's a good question. Why did he so readily give it up? Maybe he was just a man in a moment. He was hungry. He was thirsty. And that's it. What do I care about this blessing? You know, give me the food. So a very, impulsive type of nature would explain that. But, I mean, there may be more to it than that. But clearly, they had to obtain it through a real just purchase. There had to be a monetary trade. Okay. Any other questions or comments? We still have a few other questions. But before I go on, let's see if you have anything.
Rabbi.
Yes.
Initially, I think when I read this section, I was wondering why Rebecca would go to the house of Shem rather than go to her husband and let her husband know that she was uncomfortable with the pregnancy and everything. And I think it kind of ties in here in a class that I had with Rabbi Mann going over this section. He said that, Isaac was raised in the house of Abraham, and so he was more naive of what Rebecca was wise in, because their upbringing was totally different.
Right, it's true also.
That Rebecca had gone to the house of Shem because she knew that what she was dealing with, Isaac had no background and wouldn't have the information that she was seeking, and so she went to the house of Shem for that knowledge.
There was also another point actually mentioned by a man that his son, Shia, had asked the question that until Isaac expressed his trembling and he didn't really know Esav's true nature, so why did Rebecca, what information did she have about Isaac that caused her to be convinced that she had to work the prophecy through herself and that she was more adept at personalities than Isaac was? So it was from the outset that she recognized this. But is there something we could see in the beginning of the story? So we suggested was that the very first verse tells us a redundancy. What is the redundancy in the very first verse? It's 25:19. Take a look.
Rabbi, twice it tells us that Isaac is Abraham's son in two different ways.
Right, exactly. This is, these are generations of Isaac, the son of Abraham. Abram bore Isaac. Right. But there is one thing which it does tell you in the second time. What does it tell you the second time? It does not tell you the first time.
Abraham bore Isaac. You usually think of that in terms of
a woman.
A woman giving birth.
Right, exactly. That's the problem. There's a redundancy, and it has that word bore. So what could that possibly mean?
That Abraham shared or communicated or taught Isaac the whole character of the way of Hashem?
Well, it says bore, which is talking about pregnancy, which, you know, Cal is right. To play it safe, I wouldn't go into that area that it was about education, but it was more in terms of what, you know, bearing is. Bearing is more of an intimate relationship with the child than, you know, the mother has than what the father has. So it says that Abraham bore Isaac, and not Sarah. So it's implying that there was more of an intimate relationship that Abraham had with Isaac than the typical father has with a son. And this, I believe, is being told to us to answer, you know, Shia's question that how did Rebecca know that she had to circumvent Isaac in terms of this plan before she ever saw that Isaac would have made a mistake in terms of blessing, you know, the wrong son. So I believe it's telling you here that she was aware that there was this different type of relationship and that Isaac was more sheltered. And the fact that he didn't even look for the wife himself and that it was Abraham's servant who picked the wife also gave her this information. But she understood it, and this is where I believe that's why this verse is telling you this, is giving you the information necessary to appreciate why Rebecca circumvented Isaac. Because she understood that there was a more of a sheltered upbringing that he had. You know, just to say the least and be the safest. So, you know, Abraham having bore Isaac means that there was an intimate relationship necessary with Isaac as opposed to any other father and son relationship. And that, you know, that then her marriage to Isaac, she saw that it was necessary for her at this point, and she saw the prophecy came through her as well. So, and then she didn't go to Isaac, meaning to say that right at the beginning of the story, why is it that she does not approach Isaac? He's a prophet as well. Right? She has the closest relationship with him over anybody else. So now we understand. It was even at the beginning of the relationship, she saw there was a difference with Isaac, and she had to go around him in order to be successful with this. All right, you see that? All right, now let's go. We have one more question. Why does it say when they were born that Esav was all hairy and that Jacob was clutching the heel of his brother? So, I believe what's going on here is that if the Torah tells us that he's hairy, I mean, what consequence is this? So the way you answer that question is you look for any other time where it mentions this. And there's only one other time that this is mentioned, that he's hairy. And that's when Rebecca's telling Jacob to go before Isaac and to obtain the blessings, covertly. So he says, perhaps my father's going to feel me, and I'll look like a liar before him. And I'll bring a curse on myself, and not a blessing. So you see that they use that to fool Isaac. But not only that, the verse tells you openly that it was because of that very reason. It says in verse 27:23, and Isaac did not recognize him, because his hands were hairy like Esav, his brother. I mean, that was the clincher. That was the real thing which caused the blessings to go through. So what does it tell you? It tells you that God created Esav in a way in order to facilitate the success that Rebekah would have with this prophecy. That was the only reason Asa was born Harry like this. It means that it shows you God is condoning her plan and he's giving the necessary tools in order that it should work. So that's why it tells you that he's Harry. Otherwise, what need is there for me to know this? What relevance does this have in terms of the Torah? But now we understand. We understand that the providence was working at this point, right at the beginning. And it planted the necessary tools that would not be used until a decade or two later on. But of course, the nature of the human beings, you know, physique has to be genetically designed at the beginning. It's not going to change midstream through life. So that's why we're told that he was born this way. That the providence was already put in all the ingredients, all the elements that were necessary in order that this success should be met by Rebekah and her plan.
Rabbi?
Yes.
So if we say that God's providence somehow initiated that Esau would be hairy and Jacob would be smooth-skinned in order that this whole thing would work down the road, why would we not say, well, if God's providence was working there, why didn't God's providence just have Jacob come out first? He'd clearly be the firstborn, and that's that. Instead of having to go through this entire convoluted process that involved some lies.
That's a good question. I didn't even think of that. It's a tough question, too. I mean, what necessity is there that there should be this this battle? I mean, it is interesting. You see also that Abraham had two sons, and they were at odds with each other, too. And Joseph as well. You know, Jacob had 12 sons, and they were all at odds with Joseph. So it's a pattern. Three times it occurred that you have this phenomena where there is the righteous one that had to go through certain tribulations. I mean, perhaps it's for character. I don't know, but you see that it is a pattern. It's not just a one-time thing. So that could be a study in itself. To understand really how. So it's a very good point that you bring up. You have to think about that.
Okay. Thank you.
I wondered, too, because the sons were so physically different and character was so different. It seems like being twins, you know, sometimes you would assume that there would be a lot of similarities and that why having the physical characteristics so different because they weren't that different. Rebekah wouldn't have had to go through all of this, you know, dressing Jacob up like, you know, with Harry, making his skin hairy and that kind of thing. If they were more alike, then there wouldn't have to be so much effort put into that.
Right. That's also true. But here, I guess that you can answer by saying that this offered a certainty to Isaac in order that the blessings come through. If they were similar in terms of their exteriors, then there'd be no way to determine. Evidently, their voices were identical. Because that did not give away. It was the words that he used, maybe the phraseology that God had prepared my way. That doesn't sound like something Asa would have said. Which was, you know, it's a question of itself. But I could say that the difference was necessary to create the conviction in Isaac's mind of who was before him. But now we have one more question. What was the purpose of us being told, and of the event itself, of Jacob's hand clutching onto his brother's heel as Asa was coming out? There's no will in a person at that point. I mean, he's talking about an infant, not even a few seconds old.
Rabbi, I don't know if this has anything to do with it, but if you think of the Achilles heel as usually the weakness, where somebody's weakness is, and what came to me was that Jacob recognized the weakness of his brother was in the physical, like him being so hungry that he could use that weakness to having him sell the birthright.
He wouldn't have known anything at birth. That couldn't be indicative of any knowledge of Jacob before he was even born.
No, but that it was sort of prophetic that he was hanging on to the heel of...
Okay, prophetic in what way? That what?
Just that it's brought out, that it's even mentioned in the Torah that he's hanging on, that it gives insight into him understanding the personality and character of his brother and where his weaknesses were.
I don't think you can say that, because now you're going back to an intelligent aspect of Jacob at birth, which he didn't have yet. You can't say that this is demonstrative of his understanding of his brother's weakness, because that when you say the word understanding, and you say in the same sentence that this is happening at birth, so that doesn't, there's no understanding at birth. You hear what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
But there is something that it does show about Jacob. What does it show? If it's not understanding, what is it?
Well, it would indicate that he, when you think of him hanging on, it's like he is going after or is assertive in wanting to be born first.
Well, not again, you can't say wanting to be born first, because first also means knowledge of a sequence, and there was no knowledge of him at that time, right? He had no knowledge at a second old. So you can't say that. You could stop and say that it's not giving you any information about his knowledge, but it is giving you information about his, when you said assertiveness, that's right, meaning his instinctual drive. That you have at birth. The instincts are there at birth. That is not something which is learned. So anything which is not learned could be represented in an action at birth. He can't talk about him knowing the sequence, because sequence means there's some knowledge of order, and that an infant doesn't have. But what an infant does have at birth is an instinctual makeup already. So what was this done for? This was done to show Rebecca one thing, that she may have this prophecy, she may have a plan, but you need to know one more thing when you have a plan and you're using other people in your plan. What is it that you need to know?
You need to know the characters that you're dealing with.
Exactly. Meaning she was given information, even at birth, that when she's being told that the elder will serve the younger, she's also being told that the younger has the ability to attack. He has that in his nature. So now Rebecca knew this, and this now allowed her to start understanding and looking into this in Jacob as he grew, because she'd have to use him in terms of how this is going to work. Maybe even telling her it had to be through him. Meaning it gave her another piece of prophecy that although she was told that the older will serve the younger, that doesn't mean that she has to use anybody in her plan. Maybe she has to do it herself. Maybe she has to work out the plan herself. But with the fact that she now sees the hand being clutched onto the brother, now she realizes another piece of the prophecy, and that is that in reality, there is this ability that Jacob has. This is completely unnatural for any child to be grabbing onto his twin. So she used that as information in terms of that I must incorporate Jacob into the plan, because he has this ability. I'm not being shown this for no reason. And the Torah is not going out of the way to tell this to us for no reason. So the Torah told us both in theory, she got the communication verbally from the prophets that the older is going to serve the younger, but she also was given information in the physical world that the character was there that she had to utilize in terms of achieving this success. So sometimes you could just be told something in a verbal communication, and then you act on it. But here, she's given information terms in the physical as well. Another, you could say this is another part of the communication is by way of a physical demonstration that this younger one has the ability. You see that?
Rabbi, I'm having trouble accepting that one. Because it seems like if we're going to say the child has no intelligence, I recognize that certain parts of the personality are hardwired, but how would Rebecca look at that, assuming she's even noticing because she's the one giving birth, but let's assume she noticed it. How would she make the conclusion that that has to do with his personality as opposed to, child comes out grasping the other one, it's a nervous impulse that has nothing to do with anything?
The Torah then would not be able to isolate this as a unique event.
So you're saying the fact that it's written in the Torah suggests that.
Right, well, it has to be that the event itself is unique too. Meaning this is not something which happens. But then it records that in order to communicate to us that it is unique. It informs us of that. Because the Torah is not just for them, it's for us. It's for future generations. But it wants to inform us that this was this is a significance.
I thought it's a good point because maybe when he grew up and he was in his tent learning Torah all the time, you wouldn't think that he had like a nature that can be aggressive.
Right. I mean, you could ask, well, why does it have to be now at birth as opposed to later on she could see it in his nature? That's a good question. I mean, but perhaps seeing it at birth, it is conclusive that this is like the term that Doug just used, is hardwired. This is part of his very nature. And how do you know something is part of a person's very nature if it's right at birth? It was never something which was subject to a learning process. It was something which was completely part of his nature.
You know, they noticed it because they called him Yaakov, and it was important to them.
That's true also. That's a good point. I mean, they named him by that event. That was very significant. And that's what Esav says also. He says, Yaakveni. Right? These two times, he has usurped me. He's caught me by the heel twice. He bought my birthright, and now he stole it. He looked at it as a steal, but it was an outright sale. You know, Jacob properly owned it. But the whole thing I want to stress is that when we go through an area in the Chumash, this is what we have to be looking for. I mean, many times I see people writing stuff and it's, you know, they say things which are not demanded by the text, so how do you know it's true? And you're not really gaining in terms of unraveling God's clues that are in the verses. That's how a person gains and increases in terms of their Torah ability, their Torah acumen, and the love of God when they're impressed by something which they see the subtle clues and it's right in the words. So it's so vital that when we study, like Rabbi Chait says, let the words speak to you. Be sensitive. I mean, Rashi didn't have a Rashi commentary when he was looking at the Torah. You know, Ramban didn't have a Ramban commentary when he was looking at the Torah. What did they have? They had some traditions, but primarily they had the words of the text itself. And they saw something in there. And that's what we should do is when we study, is not run to the commentaries, but look at the verses, work through it, and then after you develop your questions and you start seeing a pattern and you see issues, then go to the commentaries. See if you're on track. But don't use the commentaries as a first step, because then you don't develop the increase in your acumen that you can develop. That's how the Torah is written in a way that the more you study it, the sharper you become. And then you could, the next time around, you see even more because your mind has become all that much sharper. But if you're just reading and there's no thought process and there's no point where you put down the text and think, if that's not part of it, so you're missing the whole purpose and the beauty of the Torah, because that's really the greatest enjoyment. We're designed in that way when we enjoy so much more when we see questions and then we start seeing something emerge from beyond the text. And that gives us an appreciation that no human being could write this way. So I would urge you also, when you do hear other ideas, always make sure that wherever you hear the idea from and you read it, you always make sure you get a quote, you get a verse. Somebody says something, this is the Torah says this, where does it say this? Let me see it myself. Because there is a lot of this where things are being taught and people have good intent, but this exactitude is something which I see is lost today. This type of an exactitude and meticulous care to just listen to the words and to appreciate the nuances and how God styled every single verse, every single word, and the sequence of the verses and the redundancies, right? We saw so many of them today. these are the generations of Abraham. Isaac was a son, and it says that Abraham bore Isaac. A redundancy. And we see how it says that Rebekah was the daughter of Bethuel the Aramean, and the sister of Laban the Aramean. Again, another. So redundancies are a primary way that's used many times to indicate something's going on. And then when you see things that seem to be out of place, that don't seem to be in sequence, that's another method the Torah uses. And then things which don't seem to be important at all. He was hairy. Who cares that he's hairy? What's the concern that I have about that? What's the concern that I have that he's grabbing onto the heel? These are the areas that you stop and you ask, what is going on? But you keep looking at the story and you go over it many, many times. And the saying of the rabbis, they say, if you turn it over, I mean, if you keep going over the Torah, he says you'll find new ideas because everything is in it. But you have to keep on going over. You have to review over and over. The first time you read it, certain things pop out. The second time, new things pop out. And the rabbis say another thing, that a person who learns something 100 times, there's no comparison to him and somebody who learns it 101 times. Meaning there's not going to be an end of what you're going to find, no matter how many times you go over it. It's just an amazing thing. I mean, this is God's wisdom. So if we have that awe and we have that appreciation, then we're going to be excited the next time we open the Torah or the Chumash, whatever we're learning, because we know that there's going to be an amazing amount to be found. So it's like an adventure. And you know, King Solomon says that. He says it in Proverbs. He says that if you look for it like silver and dig for it like buried treasures, then you'll understand the wisdom of God and the knowledge of God you will find. But you're digging for it like a treasure. Your attitude has to be there's something precious here. But you also have to dig. It's not on the surface. All right, let me pause here and see if there's any questions or comments.
Yes, Rabbi, may I ask, what exactly does the birthright entail?
Birthright means that a blessing that was given, that was transferred over, that in this case, it was entitled him to a certain amount of monetary blessings from God. I'm glad you brought that up because we didn't answer the main question. What do we need? Was that your question?
Well, in verse 36, it looks like Esau is delineating between the blessing and the birthright. He says, he took away my birthright, and see now he took away my blessing, so I'm a little confused.
Yeah, the birthright means the right to the blessing.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
But I'm glad you brought it up because we didn't answer that. What's the need for this to be transferred through Isaac? Can't God give a blessing without a human being? So what do you think? There's a story in Talmud Sanhedrin, and there was a couple of nations that were coming before Alexander the Great complaining about certain things about the Jews. And some Egyptians came before Alexander and said that the Jew owes us money for being in our land for so long, and they, for sojourning there, they should owe us rent or something of that nature. So this one Jew who was not really significant in the Jewish society went to the rabbis because he heard what was going on. And he told the rabbis, listen, let me respond to them. If my response is not good, they'll dismiss me and they'll allow you rabbis to give a better response. But if my response is good, it will be a great publication of how wise the Jews are and how they have the right answer. Even and nobody in the Jews will be able to answer these questions. So Alexander the Great sent to this guy. This guy's name was Ben Pasisa. He was the son of somebody named Pasisa. So this guy went before the Egyptians and said to them, all right, I have a response to you. He said, what would you say about 600,000 people who dwelt for 200, whatever the number of years was, the number of hundreds of millennia that they were there, and that they worked for you for a certain amount of time? So you had hundreds of thousands of people for decade upon decade that worked for you. What would their wage be at this point? See, the Egyptians are coming before Alexander the Great saying that they owe us rent. So Ben Pasisa comes back and says, no, you owe us labor, payment for labor. So they said to Alexander, am I making a mistake? Alexander Macedon, is that the same as Alexander the Great?
Yes.
Okay, good, good, thank you. So Alexander said to the Egyptians, all right, this is the response of the Jews, what are you saying? So the Egyptians said back to Alexander, give us 3 days. And 3 days went by, and they never showed up. They were beaten. And this went on with another case, and then the Islamic people came before Alexander the Great. And they said, we also have entitlement to, we have a complaint against the Jews. We have entitlement to the inheritance of Abraham. We're also a son. So Alexander said, all right, good question. He went to the Jews, says this is what their complaint was. And Ben Pasisa again went to the rabbis and said, listen, I have a response. Let me present the response. So the rabbi said, okay. So he said to Alexander, I've got a response. Alexander said, good. Go ahead, Ben Pasisa, address these these Muslims. So Ben Pasisa said, what would you say to a father who had a number of children, and during his life, he sends away all of them but one, and gives them gifts, and sends them away, and then gives everything he owns to the one that he retains. Would you say that there's anything more due to the other ones he sent away? So these Muslims said to Alexander, give us 3 days, we'll have an answer. So 3 days came, they didn't show up either, because he had a good response. But what am I bringing this all up for? Because this is exactly what he was referring to. Ben Pasisa was referring to later on in the Parsha, in this Torah portion, where Isaac, Abraham had sent away all of his children and from the concubines and so on, and gave them gifts. But it says he gave everything to Isaac. Everything else and his inheritance went to Isaac. Why does it say that in the Torah? To show you an answer to our question, why it was necessary that the blessings come from Isaac. God could just have blessed, that was a question, if you remember, right? A question was, why God could just bless Jacob himself? He doesn't need the blessings to go through Isaac. But the answer is the same answer as why Abraham had sent away all of his other children, gave them gifts, but then he gave everything to Isaac. Because it was necessary for the nations to accept the will of this patriarch. See, the Muslims didn't accept that. And they're going against reality. But when they're brought to before Alexander the Great, Alexander said, no, he has a good answer, and that's it. And they couldn't, the Muslims couldn't answer him, so they left, and they never showed up again after 3 days. Because the people are going to take the words of what the Torah says as true. And in the Torah itself, it shows that Abraham favored Isaac and gave everything to him and sent all the other ones away, including Ishmael. So that refutes any claim that anybody else should have from Abraham's seed except for Isaac. So also, when Isaac says, after the blessings were confirmed on Jacob, and even though he didn't know at the time it was Jacob, but then he says afterwards, nope, they went through properly, it was prophetically given, and he is now the blessed one. When he said that, it is necessary, so this way the rest of the world has no complaint anymore. See, God doesn't need Isaac to give the blessing, but it's necessary in terms of how the rest of the world reacts to the Jew, that when they'll finally come to see this and recognize it, that in their own accepted Bibles, this is there, they will not have a claim. So it's necessary for people, for nations, in order to respect this decision. Because they're trying to, if their whole claim is that, well, you know, Abraham favored us too, so you see clearly Abraham didn't favor you. And eventually the Muslims will recognize this if they face the facts. And this, of course, will maybe that'll be part of the task of the Messiah, that he will somehow be able to communicate this in a way that they will finally accept it. But also in terms of the other group of people, you know, the who came from Esau, the Amalekites and the Edomites. So they also want to have a claim of something against the Jew. But you see clearly that this is now addressed as well. So that's why it had to be, because since the claim goes back to the father, meaning they're going to say, well, Isaac loves us too. He wants us to have part of his inheritance. Once you have a statement from Isaac in the Torah and from Abraham in the Torah So Abraham refutes all claims of the Muslims, and Isaac's claim will refute all claims. His statement will refute all claims of the people that came from Esav and Edom, Edomites and the Amalekites, and all those people. That's why it's necessary, because since the claim is on the father, and they're trying to say, no, this was Abraham's wish, or this is Isaac's wish, no, look at the verses in the Torah. That was not his wish. So it had to be demonstrated by his own will, because that's something they eventually will respect. That's why I had to go through him. Now you see it?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. All right, any other questions or comments?
We're good here.
All right. All right, so a lot of information, but hopefully it's clear. If there's any review you want, during the week, if you want to review. I mean, I also mentioned last week that since Thanksgiving is Thursday and everybody's off, that we could use the day for an additional class if there's any topics you want to take up. So let's schedule, for Thursday. We could do the same time if it's good with you. If you want to do a little bit later, it's fine with me. Well, you tell me. You want to schedule something for, maybe you want to sleep in a little bit, so we can schedule something for, I know this is 1 o'clock. Is that good for everybody? 1 o'clock New York time?
Yeah. That would work.
Yeah, we could do it 2 o'clock also. Maybe you want to do 2 o'clock. I mean, people that may have plans Wednesday night to get together with other friends, even though it's not the Thanksgiving day yet, but still, people may like to go out. We can do it too, if 2 o'clock is better. Any time is good for me.
One would be better for us.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, so we'll schedule for this Thursday, 1 o'clock. And if you have any questions, let's make this class your questions. So I am not going to prepare anything. All right, so we'll do it 1 o'clock this Thursday, 1 o'clock New York time, and I'll put it up on the site so people know.
Does that work for other people on the phone?
Okay, Laura in Washington says Thursday is good, 1 Eastern, she's okay. Avner, Naomi, who else is with us? You want to type on screen? Naomi, how is that good out in Phoenix? Is that good for you? Okay, Avner says it might work. All right. Who else is there, Doug? Okay, I think we lost the session time in the class. All right. We'll do it then, and I guess we'll get a call back. It looks like the session was ended. All right, everybody have a good day. We'll meet back here 1 o'clock New York time on Thursday, Thanksgiving. Okay, good day to everybody.